Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
It's horrifying because Mr. Shooter, in his time down here, has done good things for the state and his constituents and probably will only be remembered for this. While some on the outside might think this is just an easy thing to kick somebody out, we are family here. Republicans, Democrats, men, women, old, young, we're family.
I know that the procedure wasn't perfect as far as the due process goes, but it doesn't negate the admission of guilt with the cavalier attitude and the joking. It was that alone, not the process, is what caused me to know that we were left without a choice. And with that, I vote aye.
We are confident that the appellate court will overturn this ruling because the children who have been waiting to use ESAs deserve their day in court.
My duty is to defend Americans, to protect their safety, their families, their communities, and their right to the American dream, because Americans are dreamers too.
And joining us to talk about a historic day in the Arizona legislature and some developments in the state's 8th congressional district are Chuck Coughlin, president of High Ground Public Affairs Consultants, and Carl Gentles, partner at Good Right Gentles. Guys, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for asking.
Chuck, let's start with you. So where does yesterday rank as far as the days you've been at the legislature, as far as how surreal or bizarre or impactful?
Well, I was working for Grant Woods in 1991. And Grant walked into my office, and I was the lobbyist for the Attorney General's office, and he said, "Hey, you can't talk to the chairman of the Judiciary Committee." And I go, "Well, what do you mean I can't talk to the chairman of the Judiciary Committee? All our bills go through there." And he goes, "Don't talk to the chairman of the Judiciary." Well, 3 days later, Don Kenney got popped in the ASCAM deal, and then subsequent to that, they all resigned except for one state senator who they ended up having to expel during that legislature. So it's up there. It hadn't happened in a long, long time, and it's a remarkable incident.
Yeah, Carl, it's very strange how everything went down, and ultimately, Don Shooter really forced the hand of J.D. Mesner.
Well, he did. I think we all would agree that had he not done some of the antics like sending that letter, he may very well be still in the legislature and just being censured. But I think Shooter's arrogance got the best of him. And I just think he couldn't resist. And so you saw what happened. He forced people's hands and he's out.
Are either of you guys surprised at how nearly unanimous the vote was yesterday? Only three people, including Shooter, voted against expelling him, Carl?
Yeah, I'm not. There's a national wave going on right now in the Me Too movement. And, I mean, Shooter really just served himself up. And, quite frankly, has been serving himself up for this time for a long time. And so he had multiple opportunities to change his ways. And he just didn't.
Yeah, Carl was right. The speaker was set to censure him, and then Don, instead of being quiet and allowing the process to move forward, questioned the investigation and questioned some of it, actually ended up calling some people and arguably victimizing some additional people. And at that point, the speaker's hands were really tied, and he said, "We're going." And once that happens, you lose the speaker, you're done.
In the past few years, we've seen instances, for example, with Scott Bungard in the state Senate, Daniel Patterson, both went through or were about to go through ethics investigations for domestic violence issues. They each resigned before, I believe in Patterson's case, there was actually a resolution to expel him, and he resigned before it came to a vote. Are either of you surprised that Shooter, knowing him a little bit and working with him, that he didn't resign and basically forced his colleagues to kick him out?
You know, I've known Don for a long time. He got the seat in 2010 after redistricting. John Nelson used to have that seat. Very upstanding, former vice mayor of the city of Phoenix, sort of a grandfatherly figure. And I went to John and I said, "Hey, you can't run." His wife was not well. His health was failing. I went over to Don and I said, "You know, you're taking John's seat. He's going to step aside so you can run." all we would ask of you is to lift your game up a little bit. And like 3 weeks later, he's at the League of Cities and Towns, and I see him with two beers walking up the aisle, and I'm like, come on.
So he clearly didn't take your advice.
No, he's not. He's been tone deaf to any advice about people regulating his behavior, including the speaker and many others. He hung himself.
Now, Chuck, briefly, is Shooter the worst of the worst then in terms of behavior, not in terms of how he responded to the behavior?
You know, there are no righteous ones, and they say in the book, right? There's no righteous. And so there's other things in that report which he was pointing to, which I think now will be looked at by the county attorney and others, and I think we've not seen the end of this. Maybe it may be the end of the members' issues, but as it relates to some people in the lobbying community and that, I think we're going to see some more result of that and potentially fairly egregious stuff.
What, you know, this is, I think, just the beginning of some reform that's needed down at the legislature. I mean, the atmosphere down there is, I mean, it's not one of a welcoming atmosphere if you're on the other side of the aisle, quite frankly. And so Chuck can talk to us more directly. So hopefully this is just the beginning of some reform that goes on throughout the Capitol, including a little bit more tolerance for opposing views. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, there's just a press conference the other day. I think it was I forget the name of the group that was holding a press conference. Some Trump supporters showed up and shouted them down and walked around the Capitol, identifying people of brown skin color and screaming about them being illegal aliens. So those are the kind of things that need to change. I think this is the first step in the direction of changing the culture down there, hopefully.
I was really happy to see Speaker Messnard, where J.D. Messnard, representative from Chandler, ran last time. He started off as a page and an intern down there. He's an upstanding guy. He gets the culture of the House. He's been down there when, like, Jake Flake was the Speaker of the House, you know, when we had some people who were really fine people, and he knows that. And so I think both Democrats and Republicans look to J.D. And in fact, going back to that, that's what tipped the scale yesterday is when the Speaker said, we're done.
And I think the Speaker really does deserve some credit for how he handled this. And I think he took the allegations seriously, and he handled it with, I think, a lot of class and really made sure that some substantive action took place so that a message was sent that, you know, that kind of behavior can't be tolerated. So he does deserve quite a bit of credit for the leadership on this issue.
That's Carl Gentles. Also here is Chuck Coughlin. It's our Friday newscap here on KJZZ with Mark Brody. I'm Steve Goldstein. Now for a few minutes, we turn to Lori Roberts, columnist for the Arizona Republic and AZ Central. Lori, good morning.
Good morning.
So is I'm going to ask you the question I asked Chuck. Is Don Shooter the worst of the worst, and does this in some ways clear the deck, or is this just the beginning?
No, I think it's probably just the beginning. This has been going on in corporate America for a long time. It's probably naive of us to believe that those we elected and those we entrust with shepherding the state would act any different than some of their counterparts, a minority of their counterparts in corporate America. No, I think there's more to come, and I think that it may well involve some legislators, may well involve some lobbyists or others who are at the legislature or former lobbyists.
Lori, is there a danger at the legislature, do you think, of saying, okay, we voted this guy out. He's clearly, you know, been a longtime offender. Nobody was really terribly surprised at some of the stuff they read in this memo. Okay, you know, we did this, we're done, let's move on.
I hope not. I was sort of disappointed that when the memo came out, it was left to Kelly Townsend, the number three person in the legislature, well, the number three person on the majority side in the legislature, to call for his resignation. That report laid out 82 pages of outrageous behavior, and almost as bad was Shooter's responses in some cases. When the investigators asked him about those cases, his responses were almost flip, as if he was taking the whole thing as a joke. Yet that was not enough to move anyone until Kelly Townsend came along to call for his resignation. Where was Governor Doug Ducey, who in his State of the State address talked about how sexual harassment won't be tolerated at all, period, by anyone? He was silent on it until after the Thursday bizarre letter from Shooter, which I'm certain you've probably talked about, until after that came out. It was only then that Speaker Messnard changed his opinion and said, okay, censure is not enough. We got to just get rid of this guy. And to his credit, he did that. But what, you know, why the silence when the report came out?
Do you have a sense of how pervasive this problem is at the Capitol? I mean, you mentioned that you think that, you know, this might just be the tip of the iceberg. I mean, how big of a problem is this?
Well, what I was shocked about was a few weeks ago when a couple of my colleagues, Yvonne Winget Sanchez and Dustin Gardner, did a piece after talking to 40 or 50 lobbyists and insiders and staffers around the Capitol. And it seems like the culture has changed a lot since I was out there, or else I was naive at the time. The thing that struck me as most outrageous and most concerning was that experienced longtime lobbyists recognize the sexually charged nature of things out there. They're apparently hiring these young women to go out there wearing low-cut shirts and, in some cases, thigh-high boots to sort of warm up the legislators so that they'll be more sympathetic to their points of view on bills. That's not the way you should be lobbying legislators. And the fact that lobbyists feel like that's going to be welcome out there is concerning to me. It tells me that what's going on out there is pervasive. I think the women need to leave their thigh-high boots at home, and the men need to get a grip.
Lori, final thought on this one. There were some circles that were critical of some lawmakers yesterday who, even as they voted to expel Don Shooter, they still sort of said kind things about him. What do you make of that? Are people not allowed to be sort of complicated and be friends with someone they also have problems with on some level? Because there has been, again, some criticism of that.
Well, you know, it's real easy to kick this guy when he's down. But I'm sure that if people had kind things to say about him, I think that was absolutely fine to say them. You know, what are we going to do? He was already hung in effigy. We're beating up his body. If somebody has something kind to say about him, I say it.
Lori Roberts, Arizona Republican, AZ Central columnist. Lori, thanks.
All right.
It's the NewsCap on KJZZ with Mark Brody. I'm Steve Goldstein. Also here, Chuck Coughlin and Carl Gentles. We're talking about what happened with Don Shooter at the legislature yesterday.
And so, guys, Lori talked about how pervasive an issue she thinks this is. You guys both spend time down at the Capitol. Chuck, how big of a problem is this?
It's changed. The culture's changed a bit down there. But it's not just it's popular culture. Here's the things that have changed, at least in my view. You have higher degrees of partisanship than you've ever had. You have more money involved and undisclosed contributions involved
in campaigns.
In campaigns, and you have social media. Social media has changed the construct of the place because everybody used to be, you know, you're a freshman legislator, you're not heard. You may be seen occasionally. But you're not heard from. Well, they go down now and they're all stars. They have, you know, followers. They're talking about what they're doing. And there was a hierarchical structure of leadership that I was speaking earlier that Mr. Mesnard, the speaker, knew about. But you have to conduct yourself in a manner, and he's doing that to try and emulate and model that behavior so people follow that. And, you know, we didn't get here overnight. We're not going to change overnight. But I think with people like the speaker, and we'll see who the next Senate president is, because Mr. Yarbrough is retiring, we'll see if we can model that behavior.
Carl, what do you think?
Yeah, I think the tone of national politics is really flowing downstream to multiple states, and particularly here in Arizona, where things are just becoming far more partisan. People are lining up in their tribes, and there's very little conversation across the aisles about anything. And so, but I do think Chuck's correct, where social media and other communication opportunities has really kind of changed the dynamic down there. But I think the challenge that we have is, how do we find some common ground to get the bigger issues done, like just what we just accomplished on the opioid issue? So if we could find that kind of collaborative effort on other issues like education and perhaps maybe even, dare I say, the budget, we might be able to accomplish some things down there.
You know, one of the things that I noted with Lori and other journalists have talked about this is the reluctance of the governor to step in. And I think that's a fundamental misunderstanding of the process. A governor, I've worked for two governors, been around several. You very reluctantly, very rarely interfere with House business or Senate business if you're the executive, because there's tons of other issues that you have to work on. That's their House. He's the Speaker of that House. The President is the President of the Senate. and you have private conversations. I'm sure the governor spoke to the speaker about this, but you stay out of their business. It's a rule. I mean, it's a rule that you stay out because it's a lose-lose proposition when they get involved in a House business matter.
And sure, and undue influence too early in the process to let – you need to let things play out. And that's why we have our elected representatives there in both the House and Senate. Yeah.
Now, Carl, before we go to break, we've had a history here in Arizona. We had – not that many years ago, we had the top five office holders in Arizona were women. Are we going to see more push for leadership of women in the legislature after this?
Well, I think if any time is going to happen again, it's now, given the state of national politics. But I will say that you're going to see – that there are competitive races all across this state this coming cycle. Every single one of the in the House and Senate races, they all have opposition on the Democratic side. So I think there is opportunity, and we'll see what happens on the statewide election, given who's running. I think today or this time is the opportunity for the return of women leadership in higher office.
And Chuck, you worked for a female governor.
I did, and a female Secretary of State, and lots of, they're not any different than the rest of the body down there. I mean, they have to emulate and model behavior. Lori spoke to this, mm-hmm. You saw yesterday, all the women were dressed in red. I'm like, okay, why can't we all just lift ourselves up a little bit higher here? Can't we just, model some behavior and it's how you model and how you model that behavior. There's certainly legislators down there who have been down there for a long time, females and males, that have modeled great behavior. And I'm proud that they're representatives and senators of Arizona. There's others, as we see, that get the most of the attention.
And that might make the difference in these next election cycle where women and others are going to model some higher behavior. And I think that's what the general electorate are looking for, somebody that can really represent them well and represent them in the fashion that they'd be proud of. And I think you might see a little bit more of that playing here.
That's Carl Gentles, partner at Good Right Gentles. Also here is Chuck Coughlin, president of High Ground Public Affairs Consultants. The newscap continues right after this. Good morning. This is the show on 91.5 in Phoenix with Mark Brody. I'm Steve Goldstein. We're in the midst of our Friday newscap with Chuck Coughlin, president of High Ground Public Affairs Consultants, and Carl Gentles, partner at Good Right Gentles. Guys, in a few minutes, we want to get to the State of the Union. I want to give you a chance, a minute or so, to talk about President Trump. That's all. A little take, I'm sure. But Chuck, let's start with Congressional District 8. And Carl, obviously, I want you to chime in on this. But initially, I have to ask. So your former employer, who we've already mentioned a couple of times, mm-hmm. Governor Brewer, has endorsed Debbie Lesko. How big a difference does that make, especially considering the former governor actually lives in that district?
Well, lives in it and had represented it all of her career. I mean, she was a state legislator from that area. She was the county supervisor from that area. She obviously went on to be Secretary of State and then governor. And she's been a lifelong resident of that community. I think it's a big deal. It's one of those things, and it's an older district. Carol lives in it. He's definitely a one percenter. He's a younger guy. But it's a much older district. They're going to – and she's very popular in that district. And so I think that will be a significant advantage for Mrs. Lesko's campaign.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, Governor Brewer is a very popular governor, and so her – she jumping in and making the endorsement, I think, is going to carry quite a lot of weight. I do live in a district, so I'm paying close attention. I think Dr. Harrell is, on the Democratic side, probably one of the strongest Democratic candidates around that we have in the state at the moment. And so I think she's going to give whoever emerges on the Republican side a run for their money, even though, as Chuck knows very well from his polling and his understanding of the numbers, there's a huge advantage for Republicans in that district. But I do think, though, if there was ever a time to reclaim that district, it's now. Given the scandal of the Trent Franks and then the multiple candidates on the Republican side, and in, quite frankly, the strength of Dr. Harrell on the Democratic side, so I think there's an opportunity.
We've seen some polling numbers that show Debbie Lesko and Steve Montenegro sort of at the top of the heap. It's a very, very large primary. I think 12 candidates are running in the GOP primary. Chuck, are you surprised that those are the two sort of at the top and maybe in addition to that, who is not in that top?
Yeah, they both have the best campaign organizations underneath them. Steve obviously came from that type of campaign background, has some very conservative people helping him with his campaign. Senator Lesko has a very mature campaign organization, and they've executed on their campaigns the best. The rest of them, Phil Lovis was a Trump appointee, came back into the district. I think they were really counting on a Trump endorsement, which I'm a little incredulous about. So his campaign really hasn't moved at the speed that they had hoped that it had. Mm-hmm. And then there's a couple other, Bob Stump, which we've, some more discussion about his name because he has the same name as the past congressman of the district, at least he does today. And Bob was on the Corporation Commission, and they've had some problems at the Corporation Commission. So to me, as a campaign operative, I look at the people that are helping both of those campaigns, and I said, both Montenegro and Lesko have the most mature campaign organizations going on.
Yeah, no doubt the campaign structure is going to be really important here, especially when you have the strength of the candidates on the Republican side. So it's really going to be about execution, as Chuck knows very well.
Well, Carl, what is in a name? Because Chuck referred to that as far as Bob Stump. Was he known as Chris Stump? Is he Bob Stump because of the longtime congressman out there? And it reminds me of a Corporation Commission race a number of years ago when Democrats did quite well, and their signs had Kennedy, George, and Newman. And, of course, one of the Newman was Paul Newman. And then, of course, Kennedy for Democrats is a great name as well. How much does that play into advertising and PR?
Well, it plays enormously. And so Chuck and I are going to disagree on this, I think. But I tell you what, Bob Stump is absolutely playing the Bob Stump card to try and capitalize on the former representative legislator's name, Bob Stump, up there. So it means everything. I'd be interested to see how that plays out, because I think people just remember the name and they're going to naturally gravitate to say, okay, Bob Stump's there. I love Bob Stump before. I love him today, even though he's been gone for years.
Well, Chuck, didn't all of us really want Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis to run together sometime?
Oh, right. We had that. We had Jerry Lewis, the mayor, right. And we had a Dean Martin, which is actually their names in that instance. Yeah. And they both won. But, there's a history of this in Arizona. It's pretty funny. Carl mentioned the Corporation Commission. You guys talking about it was Sandra Kennedy, African American, very popular legislator. Her billboards were green and white with a shamrock on
it. That's
right. And I was like, it was funny. And so then you had there even goes back. There was a representative that ran down in Ahwatukee years ago, whose last name was Tubbs, and he changed his name to Kyle. And got elected and got, so it goes on all the time. And, if you have a name, most people don't have the gumption to change their name. Arguably, the commissioner, Stump, says his middle name was Robert and his dad's name was Bob. So always went by Chris until he ran. He did it in honor of his father. Bob Stump was the congressman. Bob Stump was an iconic figure, was a Democrat, old school Democrat, changed to the Republican Party, was Jan Brewer's icon. I mean, Bob Stump was Jan Brewer's icon. I mean, she loved Bob Stump. And Nancy Stump, his wife, worked on Jan's staff. And so there's, if you'd met, I think Jan Brewer would say, I've met Bob Stump, and you are not Bob Stump.
Do you think this whole controversy, is that affecting the race, or is it just something that, we in the press or those, in politics talk about?
I think it's something. It's just sort of a sidelight to talk about. And from an operative angle, I think it's Montenegro hoping, because the constituency that he would normally attract is a very conservative constituency. So Montenegro, I think, is attempting to elevate that issue a bit, and others to suppress that vote and try and harvest those votes over to somebody else.
And just looking at the race, Montenegro came out very early and proclaimed the endorsement of Trent Franks. And so, as I look at the race, I'm not quite sure. And by the way, proclaimed the endorsement of Joe Arpaio, which of course both are very popular in the district, popular around the state. But I tell you what, both of them come with their problems. Arpaio was convicted, and Trent Franks was run out of office for the sexual allegations. So I'm not sure, from my standpoint, coming out the gate and saying I've got Trent Franks' endorsement is necessarily a good thing.
I'll take one Jan Brewer over two of those guys any day.
Okay, guys, 1 minute left. So I've given you 1 minute. Was President Trump, Carl, presidential in his State of the Union address?
I only have 1 minute to answer that?
You have 30 seconds because we need to check, too.
Yeah. My gosh. I mean, I think his prose was written by somebody that had a great pen. It didn't fit him. That was not his words, and I think it left a lot to be desired in terms of being believable. So it was short on policy, long on prose, so it's still yet to see what this next year will bring.
100% presidential, hit it out of the park, laid out an immigration plan that neither the hard right nor the hard left likes. It is will in the next 10 days. I think they're going to get it done. And I think the benefit will accrue to him, the speaker, the president, or the president of the Senate when that happens. I'm hopeful that they get the immigration deal done and we can move on. Because in Arizona, we've been bathed in this issue for a long time. And it's not going to go away. I get that. It's not there's many pieces to this. Mexico's our largest trading partner. This is about jobs, the economy, growing our economy. And he knows that. And so, but we need to digest this and we need to move on.
All right. Chuck Coughlin is president of High Ground Public Affairs Consultants. Carl Gentles is partner at Goodright Gentles. Guys, thanks for coming back for the NewsCap. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
And the show continues. You've been listening to the Friday NewsCap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at the show@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.